Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here Wednesday, October the 28th, 2020. 18 minutes left in the hour. Last Wednesday in the month of October. And boy, do we have a big 4 days coming up this weekend. Halloween this coming Saturday. And we talked earlier on that this Halloween will be the first time since 1944 that there will be a full moon on Halloween. First time since 1944, 76 years ago, there was a full moon on Halloween, and this year will be the same. Sunday's the time change. Sunday, we gain an hour overnight, 2 a.m. Sunday morning. Monday in this area, we are, of course, here in Marion, Ohio, hometown of President Warren G. Harding. Monday is the 100th anniversary of the election of President Warren G. Harding, November the 2nd. And then Tuesday, Election Day, which we'll all be glad to see come. So a big 4 days coming up. And a big day today on this program, because we are joined this hour. This is going to be a lot of fun. Just throw the radio out the window. Throw the knob out the window from the radio so you can listen. If you're listening on a listening device all over the world, put a piece of tape on it so you can't change the dial for the next 45 minutes, because we have got one of my favorite guests in the world. She's an Academy Award-winning actress. You probably know her best in recent years because of the just the mass communication that television is, for her role as Bev, Roseanne and Jackie's mother on the hit TV series Roseanne and the Conners. And, of course, she's still doing a lot of stage work in New York. She has the greatest voice in the world, which is why we're going to ask her to do something later in this interview for Halloween, which I know you're going to enjoy. But it's always a pleasure to welcome to these microphones somebody who worked with Dave Garraway and Roseanne. How many people can say that? The legendary Estelle Parsons. Estelle, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you? Funny, all that introduction. Work with Dave Garraway and Roseanne, that's a long stretch, I know.
I'm probably
the only one. People don't even know who Dave Garraway is anymore, do they?
You know, that's sad, that he was the first host of the Today Show, for people who might not remember. But you also worked with the I want to get the name, was it the Monkey? J. Fred Muggs?
Oh, J. Fred Muggs, yeah.
Now tell us about the Monkey. People love the Monkey, they remember him.
Well, of course, because you see, it was morning television, and nobody thought there would be such a thing as morning television. Who would pay attention to morning television? Well, apparently not enough people did, and so we got the Monkey to put the ratings up. It's interesting because I was in London when they started morning television, and I was doing a play there, and they said, oh, nobody will watch television in the morning. And I said, well, just you wait, just you see. So you see how far we've traveled. I don't know, I'm neither good nor bad, I guess, but just we have traveled very far because everybody's watching television in the morning now. That's why J. Fred Muggs came on, and gosh, he was owned by a couple of kids from New Jersey. They really didn't know anything about him. He bit me once in the face, you know.
Oh, no.
Oh, sure.
Oh, man. Well, you know,
I mean, you had to take your chances with him around.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
He was so small and so cute, wasn't he? Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I think about that, and I don't think, not just because it's a monkey on a news show, but I think about how hard it would be on live television to have a monkey. I mean, that must have been very difficult.
Oh, no more difficult than some people, I guess. But it wasn't just a news show, you know. It was an everything show. I didn't do the news. We had a news department, to be sure, and we were in a newsroom, but we did all kinds of features. I was in charge of just about everything, book features, celebrity features, let's see, fashion features. We did everything, a little bit of everything. But, of course, it was all news, right? Like Givenchy, who has now just retired from being one of the world's greatest designers. You know, the first thing he ever did in this country was to go on the Today Show. And, of course, I had to fight like mad to get people to come on because nobody knew anything about television at the time, and certainly not morning television.
Mm. Now, when we go back to those early days of the Today Show, because it's Halloween, you had talked about, obviously, J. Fred Muggs biting you. Other than that, is there a funny story that sticks out in your mind, you with him or him with other people that you can think of?
No, I can barely remember him at all. In fact, I don't know what he did. I think he just sat on Dave's desk most of the time, didn't he?
I think so, yeah. Did Dave like having the monkey there?
Of course not.
He was very serious.
Of course not. I mean, it was basically, we got the monkey because Mort Werner, who produced the Today Show, was determined to make it a success. The idea was to have Today in the morning, Home in the middle of the day, and Tonight at night. So you see, Today, it was Pat Weaver's, he was the vice president of NBC at the time, and he had this big, in our bottom drawers, we had a great big book from Pat Weaver about what he thought television was going to be. And he turned out to be exactly right. There's Today in the morning, there's Tonight at night, and in the daytime, we had a home show for a while, but it turned out to be what it is. A lot of women's features or women on TV, or I'm not supposed to say that anymore, but that was another period of time, wasn't it? Way before Women's Lib and all that stuff.
When the Today Show was being put together, before Barbara Walters, who many years later, I guess it would have been in the 70s, got the co-host title on Today, was there ever thought to having a woman who could do the news back in that era, or was that just taboo?
They wouldn't hire anybody, but when Dave went on vacation in the summer, I would sit in for him, and nobody cared, really, you know. Because I hadn't been hired to do that, so it was okay. But there was only one news person then that I recall, Pauline Fredrickson. She was on radio. And, of course, some people wondered why she wasn't on. Women just didn't do it. Frankly, I'm so old now, but it's hard for me to look at all these young women. They all look alike, and I guess they're smart enough. You know, they've all been to school and all that stuff, but there's a lot missing from what we used to have on TV from the men.
Some
men are good and some aren't, but even when the Today Show was on, you know, it went from when we started, people who knew what they were talking about. And then all of a sudden in the production meeting, you know, after the show every day, like at 10 o'clock, the talk from the producers was who looked good. So even in that early pioneer time, they were already starting to think about television as something people looked at. So they wanted people who looked good. They didn't like a news guy because he had 5 o'clock shadow. Things like that. So when he left, they replaced him with Frank Blair, who was a very terrific guy, but didn't begin to have the knowledge of the world and the news of the world like the original guy did. You know, stuff like that. So now it's all these young girls and all these old men, and that's what you see usually.
You know, a lot has to do with the host of a show. The Today Show is still on here more than 70 years later. What was it about Dave Garraway that made him watchable, attractive to watch, helped him promote that show?
Well, we interviewed a lot of people. We interviewed all the comics around. It's interesting to me that we were interviewing comics, because why were we doing that, you know? But we were. And Dave had a show in Chicago. Arthur Godfrey was a man who knew how to do TV. I mean, in those days, it was so different. Nobody cares about anything like that now. But in those days, they were looking for people who related to people in their living rooms. And Arthur Godfrey was incredibly capable of making you think you were in the same room with Arthur Godfrey. That was what everybody was looking for. And Dave Garraway had a show in Chicago. It had a lot to do with music. He loved music and jazz, and it had a lot to do with music. But his rhythm was very, very laid back, I guess I would say. His rhythm was completely different from what you see now, which is not a bit of dead air and da-da-da-da-da-da-da all the time. They are just up there preaching to you, basically not even knowing what they're preaching about, in my opinion. But he had a very different style. He was himself. He walked around, and you could watch him walking around the set. And it was just a wonderful relationship that he had with people at home. Nothing like what you see on TV now. Nothing at all.
You know,
and it was very terrible because when we went back, we used to go back on every anniversary for a few years, myself, Jack Lascouli maybe, and Dave, but principally, I guess, Dave and myself. And they would just, you know, shove him into a segment. It's got to begin now, and it's got to end now. The great mediocrity of the world has got to have a structure. It's going to begin now. It's going to end now. We've got five questions. We're going to get the questions asked. Never mind what the answers might be if you let a person talk. You know, it's just everything you see now, which is not terribly interesting, I don't think, but I don't ever watch it, so.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Estelle, because this is the thing I think we're learning from radio now, and obviously radio preceded television, but radio, you know, you and I can have a conversation for 45 minutes about anything, nothing pre-planned. You couldn't do that on television today.
No.
Which is, I want to, one more.
I used to do ads for Today. On the radio, and they'd put me in a little room, you know, with a microphone, and I would do a 30-second ad for the Today Show or a 1-minute ad for the Today Show, just extemporaneously, no script, nothing. I would just watch the clock, and I knew what I was going to talk about. But today, you would not be allowed near a television set without a piece of paper. With time slots on it, too, and every word that should be said. It was crazy.
You know, it's interesting, Estelle, because I alluded to it in the introduction there. You're going to do something for Halloween for us later, but you have a voice. It's not only strong, it's unique. When you turn on a radio without seeing the picture, if you've ever heard Estelle Parsons on Today's Show, Roseanne, any movie, you know who I'm talking to. I don't have to say every 5 minutes we've got Estelle Parsons. You have a unique voice. Have you always had that?
Well, I suppose so. I mean, I don't even know what's unique about it. But I know it's true because people say, oh, you're Estelle Parsons, aren't you? I recognize your voice. So I'm thinking, what is this voice that I have? But I don't know. It's just my voice. So
For me,
I wouldn't know it's unique if people didn't tell me.
Want to ask one more question about Dave Garraway, because I think it's important to remember him. Unfortunately, and I don't want to spend any time on this, but, you know, unfortunately, he did meet a sad ending. He committed suicide in, I believe, the 1980s. But they said he was always kind of a peculiar fellow, even when he was working. Did you find him to be peculiar in any way?
No.
He was a very serious man.
What was peculiar about him?
I don't know. I didn't know.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, he came from Chicago. He was a guy who had a TV show in Chicago, and he loved music, and it was a show about music, or mostly, or a lot about it. And he brought with him Charlie Andrews, who was a writer. So how was he any different from any other comic who walks around with his brain and with his chief writer? No, there was nothing peculiar about him at all.
When he did meet his end in that unfortunate wave of suicide, were you shocked to learn that?
No, not really. I mean, he had a very good life, and I think that was the kind of guy he was. He, you know, I think maybe other people do the same thing, but not they're not in the public eye. But he had a very good life, I think. He married an intellectual, and he always came around. You know, I went in the theater after I left there, and he always came around to see everything I did, and he married a very, very interesting, very terrific woman, who I think died before he did. I'm not quite sure now. It's such a long time ago. And I was so busy doing all my, you know, Broadway shows after that I kind of lost touch. But he would always come around, and with this woman who was from Philadelphia, because I remember I used to play a lot in Philadelphia when plays went out of town before they came into Broadway. Mm. And they would always be there, he and this woman, very much like him, very tall and thin and terribly smart. That was what characterized the two of them. They're terrific people.
Just
and certainly nothing like anybody you saw on TV now. Am I on TV now? No. Would I be on TV now? No. I act now.
Want to talk a little bit, just for a moment, about the Roseanne show and the Conners, which I believe the Conners is still on.
Oh, yeah, they started last week, or yeah. This week. Last week, because I think they're on tonight.
Will you be back this season on the Conners?
Probably I will. You know, a lot of it. A lot of it has to do with how I will go back. They had way back in August. No, way back in the spring when all of this, you know, pandemic came around. I got this, and everything got locked down. I got this big long email from the head writer or showrunner or whatever they call him, a guy named Bruce. Describing how they were going to do it during COVID, and I thought it was a joke, and it didn't turn out to be a joke, because he said in August they were going to do it, and they did, you know, and the union has very specific rules, and they have a COVID coordinator on the set, and everybody gets tested all the time, and has their temperature taken all the time, but they've done it. You know, and they have certain zones where people can be. It's very interesting. The only reason I know all that is because I basically don't get out of my own apartment very much. But is that I've got a film I have to shoot in the spring that I play. I directed that they want to put on film, or want to turn into a film. So I started looking up all this stuff, and it's extremely interesting. But anyway, they're out there, and they're doing it, and it's working. And it's just a matter of how I'm going to get out there. And I wish they would do it on Zoom, because that would be a lot of fun.
Now, how...
But it involves... You know, my character is not really me, I don't think. But I don't know. If we did it on Zoom, I could just... you know, put gel in my hair and have it standing up straight and wear an old nightgown or something and be in my Zoom bedroom, because isn't that what old people do now?
That's pretty much it. Have they told you what they want Bev to do this year, your character?
Oh, they never tell me till I get there. And I have all these wonderful ideas about what it might be, or I used to have. And it always turns out to be something else. No, I think they're very good. They're really some of the best writers in TV. I mean, I guess it goes without saying, because they're terribly popular.
Since Roseanne has departed that show, is it different?
Oh, it's terribly different. I loved working with Roseanne. She always picked wonderful people to talented people. And I'm really only interested in... people who are terribly gifted, wonderfully gifted, great at what they do. That's what I'm interested in, people like Roseanne, people like Jackie Gleason, you know, people who are really terrific, Gregory Peck, Barbara Streisand. I just don't work with people who I don't think are really great, because they interest me, what they're about and all that sort of thing. So she's terribly missed, and the question was, would one go on without her? And I think that question occurred to Laurie and maybe John and maybe everybody. Would they go on without her? And they decided to, because what the play is about is, I think, important to some viewers, because they do represent a certain strata of Americans, and they tell it like it is.
It's a very interesting show with a very long run. When that all was going on with Roseanne, the whole tweet mess that happened a few years ago, do you still talk to Roseanne? Is she doing okay?
Oh, no, I don't. I live in New York, and they would call and say, can you come out? And I would say yes, or I would say no, I'm at a play. Well, then let's find another time. So, and I would go out for like maybe the odd week or something every month. So I never did more than just show up and do my work there, you know, and have a little time to spend with my kids because my whole family, except for one son, my whole family live out there. My children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, they all live in around Hollywood, you know, Los Angeles.
You know, Estelle, I want to talk a little bit about real life here because we've all been in real life in the last 7 months with this pandemic going on. As you have said, you live in New York, in Manhattan. You've lived there for many years now. For somebody who is over the age of 60, for somebody living in one of the hot spots, as they consider it, New York, what has this pandemic been like for you?
Well, I was in a show, and then we were waiting to hear whether we were going to be extended. I was in a musical by Michael Friedman called Unknown Soldier of Terror at Horizon. And instead we got an email saying, come down and collect your stuff. We're finished. It was a terrible jolt. It was an absolutely new experience because when you're going to close in a play, you're kind of preparing yourself not to be doing it anymore. And here we were all revved up to do it and just cut off, like cutting your thumb off or something. So I went down and got my stuff, and that was that. And then my husband, who is the federally appointed monitor for the Stop and Frisk program in New York City with the New York City Police Department, so he could work from home, and I had nothing to do at the moment. So we went to a cabin that we have in the woods in upstate New York, and we were there the whole time until the middle of May when we went to our my old family house, which is in New Hampshire, and there's no heat there, so we went the middle of May and we stayed there till September. So I didn't get back to New York City till September 5th, I think, when my husband had to get a hip replaced, so I haven't been in New York City all the time at all. But I know that the theater community have, you know, people wanted to do things, unlike me. I have thought about writing. That's about it. But I haven't thought about doing something. I mean, I don't have any interest in anything, really, but being on the stage. So I didn't think about doing anything. I'm getting all lost in this because it's kind of a long... it's kind of a difficult subject. I find it very difficult getting through all this. I find every day difficult and, you know, like that. So ask me something else. I might do better.
I just want to ask you one more question in regard to this. Because New York is always a hustling, bustling city, what changes have you seen in the city since this, since you've been back?
You know, it's remarkably, what I noticed was how dirty it was, but everybody says to me, it's no dirtier than it ever was. It's just that I was away for so long, from March to September, that when I got back, it seemed to me very dirty. At least the Upper West Side seemed to me extremely dirty, and the streets and all that sort of thing. But it's just because I was away for a long time in the beautiful country, I guess. But no, Trump said a few days ago it was a ghost town, a ghost town, a ghost town. He has to repeat everything all the time. But anyway, it's not a ghost town at all. There's traffic. It's very much like it always is. But the biggest change is that when you go in Central Park or Riverside Park, which I do every day and walks and runs and stuff, there are a lot of people out in the parks, more runners, more more everything in the park and with their kids and everything. So it's wonderful that we have such wonderful parks in New York because people are really using them. A place that we used to go, which nobody ever went to before, hardly. Maybe you'd see one other person. Now you see like 10 or 20 people around there, or maybe even more, picnicking and in little hollows and things like that for privacy. So the big change is people are out and about much more than they used to be.
Another subject that's very interesting, of course, we all know in 6 days we're going to have an election. It's a presidential year. It's a big year politically for us here in Ohio because Warren G. Harding, we're going to celebrate his 100th anniversary on Monday. But you came from a very politically active family. Tell us a little bit about your background in politics.
Well, I didn't think it was appropriate to act when you grew up. I acted in a community theater from the time I was 7 till I went off to boarding school at 15 and off to college and all that. And I just didn't think you acted when you grew up. It didn't seem to me something worth doing. So I thought I would go into politics, so I majored in political science in a college, and I went a year to law school, and I was elected in my town, Marblehead, Massachusetts, a famous little town. It's very, very, very old. We have signers of the Declaration of Independence, and we have a house that part of the house was cut off so Lafayette's carriage could get through town. So the planning board is very important. We have old mansions there. It's an old fishing town. It's one of the greatest natural harbors in the world. So I ran for the planning board and got elected. And so I was the youngest person, the first woman ever elected to office in Marblehead, Massachusetts. But no sooner did I get elected than I went to New York to visit a friend and visited another friend who happened to be vice president at NBC and ended up with a job in the Today Show. So I said to my father, I'm going to New York and take this job. And he said, oh, we Parsons don't leave home. You know, I'm from a New England family. It's been there since 1632. So I said, well, I'll be back in about 6 months. It's from morning television, and who's going to watch television in the morning? So, of course, I never did go back. And then I left the Today Show because I just hated interviewing people. And they asked me to go to the Grace Kelly wedding. I said, you know, I have twins. I really don't want to go. And I said, I guess it's probably time I shovel this job in. And so I did, and stayed home with my twins for 2 seconds. And then my husband said, you always wanted to go on the stage, didn't you? Why don't you do that? So then I started doing musicals.
You know, it's kind of interesting as we head into this election next week, because as you just noted, you were politically active when you were younger. You did work on the Today Show, which was a newsy type of a program. Do you stay in touch with the news? Have you always been somewhat politically active through your life?
No, I was very active when I first came to New York. I was out on sound trucks speaking, you know, and getting heckled and all that stuff. I was very active for a while there, but no, it didn't last because the theater's like an alternate universe, you know, and it's been a bit of a relief to think I live in a universe now where I don't have to think about it. But I like to do it. I like to think, you know, I like to talk to my husband, who I don't think likes to talk to me. But I like to say, like, oh, look, so-and-so's running, but look how they do. Look how they don't know how to really do this, and look how they're doing that. That's how I talk about things, which, of course, you can imagine is not very interesting to somebody else who's not in show business. Oh, look, they should fix their hair if they're going to run for office. Well, they shouldn't be. Well, the biggest thing that's getting me now is that everybody's talking about Trump, all the Democrats, and the number one rule, if you're a really good politician, which these days nobody in politics is really good, but when the best people, I was fortunate to live through all of Roosevelt, I think he first got elected when I was in first grade, but is you don't talk about your opponent. You talk about what you're going to do and how wonderful you are and all these wonderful things you're going to do for all these people who could vote for you. So I get really, really angry when I hear Democrats start talking about Trump. I mean, it just drives me crazy, and it's driving my husband crazy, too, because it's driving me crazy.
You know, Estelle, I want to ask you about this on that point, because I have been making this contention for about the last month. And I'm not saying, for people who like Biden, I'm not saying that he's not a perfectly fine, likable guy. This is not what I'm trying to say. But on what you just said, I think this is the first election I've ever seen, presidential, in which really what it's about, when people are going to the polls, and we'll go to the polls on Tuesday, it's about the people who really like Trump or the people who really hate Trump. I don't think anybody's voting for Joe Biden to say that. I think it could be any Democrat. As long as it's not Donald Trump, that's what they want.
Yeah, they either do or they don't. We'll find out next week. But let me ask you something, if I may. I'm wondering where Marion, Ohio is, because I've been doing shout-outs for the Playhouse in the Park. They're building a wonderful new playhouse there. I played there in 1965 in a tiny little house with a postage stamp size stage. And the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, you know, they're going to have this great, the third one they will be building. So are you near Cincinnati, or where are you near?
We're about 45 minutes outside of Columbus.
Columbus,
right in the center of the state.
I didn't even think about Columbus. Yeah. I was thinking you might be near Cleveland.
We're closer to Cleveland than Cincinnati, but closest to Columbus.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of north.
I'm surprised. So you are probably then east of Cincinnati, northeast of Cincinnati, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But it's not too far from Cincinnati. Luckily, Ohio's kind of centrally, being in the center of the state, we can get to Cincinnati, Cleveland, Columbus pretty easy.
Yeah. I've played all those places. I know them all well. That's why I'm talking about it, you know?
Well,
I know Cleveland well. It's wonderful with their theater district. And I know Columbus. I played at the university there with Miss Margarita's Way. It was a wonderful experience. And they have a wonderful music department, along with everything else wonderful they have.
You know, I was going to ask you, Estelle, after this whole COVID thing kind of dies down and people are out doing things again, would you want to go on the road again?
Of course, I would love to be on the road my entire life, but I'm directing an awful lot now in and among my acting jobs. I just did Tony Kushner's play, you know, about Hitler, which had to be done. I just did that in this musical before the COVID thing came along. But I'm directing a lot, and I have a marvelous play by a young woman about racism, which we were about to develop when the COVID thing came, so, you know, we couldn't do our development things, but we are just thirsting to have this be over enough that we can start developing this very big and wonderful play about the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Taney, speaking about how bad it might, how conservative it might be now. Justice Taney said that black people were not equal to white people. I mean, it was the worst decision the Supreme Court ever made. I don't know, maybe this woman will go on and make even worse decisions, but anyway, that was the worst decision. So this is a descendant of Taney, great-great-great-great-great-niece, and she's written a marvelous play, which Don Douglas Thompson said he would do if she would write it, and she did, and it's great, and we can't wait to get into this big racist mix, you know, because I'm terribly involved in that and watch everything I can that's meaningful, which is hard to find anything meaningful about the theater and racism. But we do have to do better in being inclusive with black people into our society. So I'm very busy with that stuff, which I guess you could call political in some way.
You know, Estelle, of course I'm not going to ask you who you voted for or are going to vote for, but I
No,
just...
I did vote. I already did. We voted because we thought we'd be out of town again. We're not staying here just till my husband gets better, and then we'll be off again.
So I want to ask you this. Next Tuesday, again, not who you voted for, but what do you think will happen? If you had to give an educated guess at this point, who do you think's going to win next Tuesday, Trump or Biden?
I'm not going to get into it, Scott.
I really don't know.
I vary. One day I think one thing, one day I think another thing. But I'm trying hard today not to get into it anymore and not to think about it anymore. But I tell you, I think it is made, you know, we are very careful, my husband and myself. Well, everybody in New York is. It's nothing. But, you know, we stay home all the time and we have takeout food and all that stuff, you know. So we're extremely careful. But I forgot what I was going to say, something about voting. But
well,
anyway, I forgot.
Let me just this one more question on voting. Do you think it will be close? Not who will win, but do you think it'll be a close election?
I don't even know that. Why are you asking me these things?
I won't ask.
Never mind all that stuff. I'm going to read you a poem.
Yes, this is what we'll move on to something fun here. Now, Estelle is going to do something very nice for us, which I appreciate a lot.
Didn't even ask me, and you're not even paying me.
Isn't that terrible, Estelle?
I can't believe you.
I know. I really am. I'm awful during this season. It's the politics. It's made me crazy, Estelle.
Well, that's what I was about to try to say, that no matter what, I think we are in a state of terrible heightened tension, feeling we're sick. You know, having an upset stomach, all the things that happened to you just because of the pandemic. But on top of that, I expect after November 3rd, we'll all breathe a sigh of relief just to get the thing over with, don't you?
I hope so. It's you know, you ask these questions, but honestly, when I'm not on the radio, I don't want to talk politics. It's so consuming right now.
Yeah.
So what?
But it's very dangerous, all this business about militias. Let's not get into it. I mean, we're in a very dangerous time in this country.
So we're because of that.
We can agree to that, can't we?
We certainly can. And here's what we're also going to agree to. And again, she's not being paid for this. She's doing this out of the kindness of her heart to make us happy during this season when we're all wound so tight. Estelle Parsons, with that great voice, great actor, Academy Award winning actress. That's all you have to know. Estelle Parsons.
I know that's all anybody has to know. If you say you're an actress and you're the best actress in the world, but if you can't say Academy Award winner.
Yeah, that's right. It's just out the
window. People don't know what to say to you. Oh, you're an actress? Oh, and then they move away.
So I am going to...
No one can talk to actresses. But I am going to tell you about the Skeleton Parade, because the skeletons are out tonight. They march about the street with bony bodies, bony heads, bony hands and feet, bony, bony, bony bones with nothing in between, up and down and all around. They march on Halloween.
Perfect, Estelle.
Will you hire me now?
I will. How many more are you going to give? That was so great. How many more are you going to give us?
You're so silly. This is about witches. Wait a minute. You spelled that one wrong. That's all right. I forgive you. Witch, where do you fly? Under the clouds and over the sky. Witch, what do you eat? Little black apples from Hurricane Street. Witch, what do you drink? Vinegar and good red ink. Witch, where do you sleep? Up in the clouds where the pillows are cheap. I think that is a terrible poem. Did you write that poem?
No, I didn't write that.
Up in the clouds where the pillows are cheap. What kind of witch is that?
I don't know. Now, Estelle, there is...
I wouldn't play that. If you offered me that job for money, I wouldn't take it.
You'd say you were done with that. That doesn't work. But
well, I just wouldn't do it because it's a very fun little poem until it gets up in the clouds where the pillows... cheap. What's that supposed to be saying? Nothing. You send it back to the writer and you say, come on.
We need to
rewrite.
You
can do better than that.
Yeah, we need to rewrite. Now, is there one on there about a haunted house? I think that's the one we'll go to wrap the... Unless you want to read more. We have a few minutes left here.
The night of Halloween.
I think so.
The harvest moon fills the sky. A wicked witch goes flying by. Ghosts and goblins, skeletons too, moaning and groaning, waiting for you. Black cats prowl the graveyard plots, witches cook in cauldron pots. Cemetery ghouls roam the ground, not one unopened grave is found. Tombstones are an eerie sight, shadows dance in full moonlight. The haunted house on the hill. Walk in there and you get a chill. Jack-o'-lantern's eyes so bright, trick-or-treaters scream in fright. It's a time like you've never seen. Tonight's the night of Halloween. And you see you got it right because it's a full moon.
You know, what do you make of that, Estelle? You were living the last full moon, 1944. What do you make? First full moon since 1944 on Halloween night.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? I'm going to tell my little granddaughter. Oh, I'm going to tell everybody I see today, which will be nobody but my husband and the housekeeper, I guess. But anyway, I'm going to say, did you know the first full moon on Halloween since 44? Well, the problem is, you know, if you live in a city and the buildings are of very strange heights here and there and everywhere, you don't get too much chance to see the moon. It's not like in the country, you know, where we have been all this time since March. It's wonderful because you see everything that's happening in nature, which you don't have time to look at when you're busy in your life. But now you see the trees in winter, and then you see the buds, and then you see the leaves, and then you see the flowers, and you watch the moon, and you watch the sun, and where they go, and their journey around the sky. So it's going to be very exciting. So I don't know how many kids are going to be allowed out on Halloween this year, but if you're not in a city, that full moon's going to be great. I'm going to go out and howl at it. What are you going to do?
I'm going to go take pictures. That's what we all do now. We take pictures.
Oh, that's what you do now?
That's what the world does.
Oh, okay, not me. I'm just going to howl.
You know, we got a question here, Estelle. We've got about 2 minutes left. Where do you keep your Academy Award?
Oh, my Lord. It's on the floor in my bedroom. And there, my bookshelves are full on every wall. The floor is three deep with stacks of books. And then all the pictures leaning against the floor are on the floor leaning against the wall. And in a corner is my Oscar. The reason it's there is that everybody who comes in this house, doesn't matter who, lawyers from Texas, you know, it doesn't matter who comes in, they all want to get a look at the Oscar. So I had it on a shelf with my other awards for a while. And then I thought, I'm sick of having to get on a stepladder and get that down, so let me just keep it on the floor so when anyone comes in, I can show it to them.
Beautiful. And Estelle, the last thing we want to mention, so everybody knows, we've got the first full moon since 1944 on Halloween this Saturday. We've got the election next Tuesday. Remember to go vote if you already haven't. But Sunday, November the 1st, we all get an extra hour of sleep. We fall back an hour. Are you going to remember to set your clocks, Estelle?
Oh, I don't do that. No, I'm not going to do that. My husband will do that, or I don't think it'll get done, but... Maybe I'll have to. I don't know.
You know, Estelle, this is the thing.
Set them back. Yeah, you fall back.
Fall back. 2 hours. Fall back an hour.
Spring ahead.
Yep. So you get an extra hour sleep Sunday morning.
Wow.
Estelle, you are priceless.
If there's one thing I don't need, Scott, it's another hour of sleep. I mean, I'm even sleeping occasionally more than 8 hours. Don't even get started about one's lifestyle during this pandemic. Anyway,
Estelle,
I've enjoyed talking with you.
I love you dearly. I hope you come back as often as possible because we love hearing from you. Estelle, take care, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay, bye.
Stay well. The legendary Estelle Parsons, Academy Award winner for her role in Bonnie and Clyde, but you probably know her best from the series that's still on the air, Roseanne and the Conners, where she plays Bev, Roseanne and Jackie's mother. There's a win- and was on the Today Show with Dave Garraway when it all started. What a career, what a fun woman. We'll be back with Glenn Coble and on the air right after this.
Look for us on Facebook by searching WWGH 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, and clicking like for exclusive content.
Programming on WWGH Radio 1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road,